morning, everyone. Welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for August 18th, 2013. Koyo Kubose here. So glad you joined us. Well, recently I had a car trouble. My truck, I have a 2005 Chevy Colorado truck, and when you step on the gas going up a hill, no power. Engine doesn't rev up. If you're in neutral or park, if you step on the gas, the engine revs up. But when you put it under load, no acceleration. I couldn't go more than 40 miles an hour, even if I floor the gas, it doesn't accelerate on a slight going uphill. So I took it to the shop, and what happened was electrical problem, and rodents had chewed up some wiring, and in fact they found a nest between the gas tank and the truck bed. It was a basketball size big nest, they said. I didn't see it, but there wasn't any voltage coming from this, what's called a power control module. You know, everything's computerized nowadays. And then when they replace those components, it's expensive. So that PCM, or power control module, they had to replace that. $400 for that, plus $300 for the labor, so you're talking $700. And as I thought about car repair bill due to rodent damage, I was thinking, well, that's the price of living in the foothills, where we don't have a garage, so the rodents have access to cars. They're looking for homes. And I put a sign. I just jokingly sometimes say, I put a sign. I don't really put a sign. I put a sign on the car that says, hey, this motel is closed. But the rodents, they don't know how to read. But it's the price of, this is the way I reframe the high bill. Otherwise, you say, hey, rodent damage again. You know, I've had other problems with rodent damage, doing wiring too. And it could be a source of financial repair bills and all this stuff. But I've come to sort of not dismiss it, but accept it. And say, oh, that's the trade-off of living here in the foothills. And it really helps me to accept. And I'm wondering whether we could do that in other applications. The trade-offs or the price of living in a certain place, of being born human, of being married, of being a parent, of being this, of being that, instead of getting upset. Now there are, it's not that acceptance means passivity and you don't do things to try to, you know, prevent these kind of things or minimize them, but you don't get so victimized, self-victimized by it in an extreme way, where it upsets and causes other problems, emotional problems. So that's something to think about in terms of acceptance. Well, today we're honored to have as our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, Wendy Shinyo of upstate New York. She was part of our LM2 group, Lay Minister 2 group, some years ago, and she has served as the Trailblazers is our lay minister resource organization. She has served as a past president. She's been very active in that organization. So, Wendy Shinyo.
Thank you, Reverend Coyle, and good morning, everybody. I was thinking a lot about my glimpse the last couple weeks, and, you know, the thing that I kept thinking about is how whenever you have a task before you, like trying to you know, convey or communicate your personal experience of the Dhamma in your everyday life, there's sort of this expectation that builds that it be just right, you know, it'd be perfect, and you know, that in and of itself can cause you to freeze and not come up with anything. But it got me going along another line of thinking that ended up being quite fruitful for me, and I think it's something I'm going to explore even more as I go further, and that is examining your life very objectively, not as, oh, this is me, and you know, I've done it all wrong or I've done it all right, but how have I done it? And what I kept coming back to was all the things that I thought Buddhism was, I thought the Dharma was, and I thought Buddhist practice was, that it wasn't. So I put a little piece together called Five Ways How Not to Be a Bodhisattva and Other Confessions of a Dharma Practitioner. And I'm going to convey my own experiences centered around five different ways, and then show the teachings that I really came to understand, the true teachings of how to do the Dharma, based only on the book The Center Within by Reverend Guillaume Kobose. So, okay, here's my five ways. And I think many of you might relate to these. I hope so. number one, I thought if I became a Buddhist, it would profoundly change me, and I would get all spiritual, get better, get different, and then I would help change the world. So, becoming a Buddhist did not profoundly change me. Studying the Dharma did not profoundly change me directly. Imitating practitioners doing Buddhist practices did not profoundly change me. But I was profoundly changed by looking carefully, quote unquote, as Reverend Guillaume Kobose wrote, and finding the truth of things as they are, of suchness, finding universal life deeply within myself and in all things around me. He wrote that to learn Buddhism is to become aware of life, which means to become aware of oneself. Now, I am profoundly changed by not becoming different, not becoming more spiritual, but becoming intimate with who I am in all my foolish, ego-grasping, judging thoughts. In that intimacy, I learned to develop compassion for myself, for being this foolish being, which creates space then to change a bit by not blindly acting on all the foolish thoughts I have. And with the compassion for myself, compassion for others increased, because I saw how we were the same in our foolishness. The second way of not becoming a bodhisattva is I thought if I studied all the Buddhist texts, I would become wise. Well, I studied the Lam Rim, the Prajnaparamita, the Buddhist epistemology, Buddhist logic, the Abhidharma, Majjhimika philosophy, the Vinaya, Lojong, the way of the Bodhisattva, Nagarjuna's 70 stanzas, and on and on and on. And although I have learned much that I've been able to take inside and examine in my life, I did not become wise. I became wiser when I tried to apply what I learned and watched how my mind worked with no, quote, rigid expectancies and no self-conscious intentions, as Reverend Guillaume wrote. He wrote, to learn Buddhism is to change one's life. Regardless of how much we learn, unless your life changes, nothing is learned. It's just accumulated knowledge. He also wrote that when there is too much mind in our activities, we become artificial and our lives do not flow smoothly. Life must flow out from within and not for external reasons. So I will still study and do still study, meditate on the texts, refer to the texts of the masters, but not to become wise. not to become anybody, but to better understand myself. And in understanding myself, my need to become anything has lessened because I see that I already am. In the confidence of being what I already am, I then can genuinely meet and be with all others with no desire to be more wise. Now, maybe that is wise. Maybe it's foolish. But I know it's things as they are. Number three, I thought if I met a great teacher or a lama and get a Dharma name, my being would somehow be altered and I would cease to be my old stupid self. So I met and took teachings from a lot of wonderful teachers over the years, some who may be enlightened even. And I am also the proud owner of four Dharma names. I am Tenzin Chodron, or Dharma Lamp of the Teachings, which was my first ordination name, given to me by Venerable Drupal Dzogchen Rinpoche, a Drikung Kagyu Lama who proclaimed that now my life would have meaning. His proclamation that now my life would have meaning was much more important and something I treasure more than that name. I am also Khonchog Zangmo, or Noble Triple Gem, ordained by His Eminence Garchen Rinpoche, also a Drikung Kagyu Lama, who is respected by many lamas as a pure and realized master. I am Khonchog Pema, Three Jewels Lotus, ordained by Venerable Kenpo Sherebozer Rinpoche, a Drikung Kagyu Lama, an accomplished scholar who exudes love while he teaches. And I am also Shinyo, Heart Son, through my Kisarana with Koyo Kobose Sensei, a teacher given to me by the loving and compassionate grace of Amida's light, of life. I did not seek this teacher, but the teachings called to me. Each teacher did alter me somehow. A little seed was planted by each, and each name pointed me towards the truth, each name a signpost, pointing where I needed to go, not what I was. Tenzin Chodron, Dharma Lamp of the Teachings, was a bit of a rebel name for me that was given to me by my first Lama teacher because it pointed to where I had come from some intense years studying Galupa teachings through the Asian Classics Institute. It pointed me towards continuous study and also to hold the Dharma as my compass, my rock. Khonchog Zangmo, Noble Triple Gem, the Khonchog or Triple Gem part of this name is a lineage name, which, by the way, I also share with Sayo Sensei, who's another lay minister with Bright Dawn. The noble part tripped me up when I first received this, puffing me up at the thought that I got the name noble by a wonderful enlightened master. Now, he was a wonderful teacher indeed, Garchen Rinpoche. He gave me that challenge of the name noble. And the challenge was to see what noble really meant. And I found out it wasn't at all to do with me. Khonchog Pema, my bodhisattva name, given when I'd taken the bodhisattva vows, again the lineage name of Khonchog, or the three jewels, but then Pema, the lotus. This is the perfect signpost to begin on the path of the bodhisattva. It's all about being in the muddy pond with the whole world, or even just your neighbor. You can't work as a bodhisattva without getting a little muddy. And then there's Shinyo. And of course, Shinyo Heart Son Kokoro, as Reverend Koyo explained to me, has many, many meanings. Essentially, it's heart, mind, and center or essence. When Reverend Koyo gave me the name, he mentioned a warm heart. This has been the path of the Dharma revealed to me by Bright Dawn. The heart mind, not just the mind. Rowing with both oars, wisdom and compassion, to get to the essence of the Dharma, the essence of myself. Each teacher, each name planted the seeds. But I had to water the seed and make sure it was planted in good soil and had plenty of sun and to continue to tend to the sprout so as not to be choked by weeds or eaten by insects. Yes, teachers can plant seeds in us, but we have a choice whether to nurture them or to let them die. to live the truth they teach and model to us. Gyomei Kobose Sensei wrote, unless we are aware, we do not learn anything. We have inspiration and no teachings. Teachings are everywhere, all around us, if only we open the mind's eye to see. So no, I haven't ceased to be my old stupid self. I am Wendy Shinyo now, and taking that name as my guidance keeps me pointed in the right direction, to the heart of who I am. That name enabled me to embrace my bamboo nature as the source or heart of wisdom and compassion. As Reverend Gyomei wrote, we have to be ourselves. Each of us is unique and perfect, even in our foolish, silly selves. He didn't write that last part. I did. Number four, I thought that if I studied and practiced to become a teacher or a minister, only then would I have the qualifications to help the world by spreading the Dharma. I thought that becoming a teacher would make me better. Well, it wasn't long after I realized that becoming a Buddhist wasn't going to make everything different. Then I thought, well, then I'd have to study all the Buddhist texts, and that might be the ticket. Soon after, I knocked off 18 courses through the Asian Classics Institute and saw that my life hadn't profoundly changed. I thought that it must be taking refuge and getting ordained in a new Dharma name that would be the ticket. Then, after taking teachings, getting empowerments from one teacher, and I saw that I hadn't changed that much for the better and was no closer to enlightenment. I thought then I must need to connect with another teacher, maybe my heart teacher, get a new teaching for things to change. And then, even though I found what I thought was the true teaching with Bright Dawn, and my life did begin to change, I thought I was still not quite ready to share what I knew. Somehow, not made of the right stuff, or not possessing the right credentials. Maybe another course. Maybe another title. Maybe. But as Reverend Gyomei Kobose wrote, in our culture, it's all about purpose and goal orientation. He said, purposeless action is considered meaningless in our culture. Yet he stressed, in addition to purposefulness, the other side of life is purposelessness. Both aspects are true, he wrote. To accomplish things, we must have purpose, but there is also purposelessness, too. A flower blooms, a bird sings, a child plays, he wrote. The flower cannot help but bloom as it does. There is no intention. Water flows effortlessly. When you love, you love. Gyomei Kobose Sensei wrote, if we do something from the beginning with purpose and meaning, then it becomes quite rigid. Meaning and reasons may be given later, but the doing is the purpose itself. If we continually live in the midst of purposeful, directed activity, soon we feel pressured and must enters our lives, and there's no naturalness. The Buddha taught that the essence of life just is, as it is, and if we analyze it, it then becomes two, but the reality is always one. Only when we analyze do we have different directions. True reality is natural and purposeless. When one just is, one forgets all other things. One forgets self. And then Sensei quotes Dogen, to know oneself is to forget oneself. And he adds, one just is. And the clincher, number five, was I thought I could help the world by spreading the Dharma through teaching, blogs, writing, if only I had the hours of time each day to devote to nothing else but that. I thought everyday life was preventing me from spiritual realization. I thought the people in my life were somehow not the all beings I vowed to save when I took my bodhisattva vows. Yep, it's always something. You sit down to meditate and the dog needs to go out. You're going to write that Dharma talk and you need to go to your mother-in-law's house to fix the TV. You pop in your ear pods to listen to a talk you've been waiting to hear for weeks and your neighbor runs up behind you and asks to walk the block with you. You save the evening to write a blog, and your partner begs you to watch a movie with her. man, if these people wouldn't keep delaying me, maybe I could do my bodhisattva work. Reverend Gyalmay Sensei wrote that the purpose in Buddhism is to overcome the self, overcome the duality of things, overcome multiplicity and become one's true self. He said that one should become totally selfless and went on to explain it in a little story, an anecdote about a half full bottle of water makes noise when you shake it, but if it is completely full and there's no airspace, there's no noise. And when the bottle is completely empty, of course, there's no noise because there is no water. He taught that selflessness is when we are filled to the top and then we become selfless. He writes, you should attain complete fullness, and that this is Buddhist selflessness. He says, you are the one who occupies the whole world. There is no small, petty self to be disturbed. Even if you are shaken, there is no noise. Forget enlightenment, he writes. Forget Buddha. You become one with the whole universe. This is enlightenment. This is selflessness. And I will leave you with the same thing that Reverend Gyalmay wrote about, as was also stated in the Prajna Paramita Vajracchedika Sutra, or the diamond cutter or diamond that cuts through illusion. In the dialogue between Subhuti and the Buddha, Subhuti asks the Buddha how to create, how he should practice, how he should think to create the most awakened mind. The Buddha answered that no matter how many species of beings there are, that when we lead them all to liberation, to nirvana, to the pure land, in fact, when an infinite number have been liberated, there will not be a single being who is liberated, if we are thinking with an enlightened mind. May it be so. Namo Amida Butsu.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Wendy Senior has been a guest host on for Live Dharma Sunday too, and I've always been impressed at the way she works with the Dharma and applying it in a personal way. And again, this Dharma Gents really working and then relating it to passages from the center within. Frosting on the cake, so to speak, and I think it reminded me of sometimes when we read a book, we think that, oh, I read the book, or even if you studied the book carefully, not you just didn't read it, but you really worked with it. But then, as time goes by, something happens and you receive a teaching from the material that you read, and oh, gee, I didn't think about this aspect. This is something new. Well, you know, we shouldn't expect that we read spiritual material and that, oh, that's it. I know it. Because we change. See? Time goes by, new experiences, things happen. As we change, we're a new person. And we relate to the same material in new ways. That's terrific. So we shouldn't limit ourselves by, or be surprised by saying, oh, here was a teaching or a statement, say, in Center Within. And but it's a deep well. You could keep going back to this same thing. And I've experienced this several times when I reread something and, wow, this was like, I never read this before. You know? And it's an interesting experience. And sometimes when someone says, hey, I read this in Center Within, then I might say, gee, was that in Center Within? And it's a page reference or whatever, and I could go and find it, and I say, yeah, there it is. how wonderful this is. The resource or source of the teachings is like life. And nature, always teaching us. It's not like, oh, I learned something from gardening, or I learned something from this. Any daily activity, the same old thing, holds a lot of hidden treasures for us. Okay? And, well, what I often think about when we think about how my father expressed the teachings, and then I remember in the Life of Oneness video that we have, that the commentator says that Reverend Gilmer Kubota, his koan, it wasn't Reverend Gilmer's koan, or he wasn't known for this, but this was the commentator's, who was a disciple of my father. This was his take, his interpretation. So he said, Reverend Gilmer's koan is, could be or is, just live life. And that really is perceptive and hits it on the head. That's the teaching, just live life. But that's not very explicit, is it? It doesn't tell us that much. It tells us the way it's expressed. That's why it's a koan. What does that mean? Just live life. It might open a door to a certain spiritual look at the meaning of naturalness or selflessness. What does that mean? How do you unpack that? Just live life. Well, I was just thinking maybe I ought to make a sign like that. You know, make an artistic thing. Just live life. And, it's something that you could see and then say, if you, it's kind of a paradox or ironic where you say, if you get a certain understanding or insights about your life and then you say, just live life, you say, oh, yeah. You know, but if you don't have that, insight, just live life. What does that mean? Yeah, we're all just living life. What does that mean? That's not very helpful. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Thank you very much. And until next time, keep going. And you have a very beautiful, purposeful day.